It is Friday, September 18th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, Croatia closes most of its border crossings with Serbia. We talk with a correspondent about the situation.
It is literally changing hour by hour.
Thailand builds a case against Uyghur smugglers accused in Bangkok's deadly bombing. And the Country Music Association announces its nominees for this year's awards. It's all ahead. Croatia has closed most of its border crossings with neighboring Serbia Friday after trying to cope with a large influx of migrants and refugees. I'm joined now by VOA correspondent Aisha Tanzim, who joins us on the line from Budapest, Hungary. Aisha, at the moment, what has the current situation like involving refugees trying to get from Serbia into Croatia?
You know, it is so hard to say what the current situation is. It is literally changing hour by hour. So last night, until late last night, I was at the border of Serbia and Croatia, and the Croatian border was open. And I was talking to police there, and they were saying that all the migrants will be let in, but they will be taken to camps and they will be registered. But there's a hold up because the line is so long. And a couple of hours that it took us to drive back to Budapest, and there you have it. Croatia has closed the borders and said it cannot take any more migrants. We know Hungary's borders are closed. All the migrants that we're talking to on the way are looking for alternate ways of getting to mostly Western European countries. And they were trying to find ways of going through Slovenia. We don't know how long Slovenia's borders are going to remain open. It is just a situation in flux, and not just for us as journalists, but for migrants as well, because they're literally walking from border to border. A lot of them have run out of money. A lot of them have had to pay people smugglers. I had people tell me they would rather go back to Syria at this point, but they had no money.
Yes, I mean, the conditions for some of these people must be very difficult, particularly those with children or those people that might be, you know, weak or disabled. It must be extremely difficult.
Yes, the conditions for a lot of these people are very difficult. They've walked thousands, hundreds, if not thousands of miles. We just met a couple of families, one with a five-month-old baby who was tear-gassed at the border of Hungary. And in fact, both the children were tear-gassed, a five-year-old and a five-month-old baby. We just met another family that had a seven-day-old baby that had just been born in Greece, and they were on the road with this seven-day-old baby. There are pregnant women out there. There are old people out there. I saw this old man whose legs were all swollen. All kinds of people are out on the road. They're sleeping out in the field. Sometimes they get tents. A lot of times they don't. Even when people are trying to help them, there's not enough to go around. We were at this in this border village called Bezdan in Serbia, where the Serbian Red Cross had food and water, but they were only giving it to women and children and people under 18 because they didn't have it for everybody. So the men had to do without food. So the situation and the condition these people are going through, very dire. What we have seen most of the times is that local volunteers, just random people off the streets, are coming up with food and water, and they're the biggest percentage of help that these people are getting.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Aisha. That is VOA correspondent Aisha Tanzim reporting from Budapest, Hungary. Joining me here in the studio is social media editor Andrew Palshevsky. Andrew, what kind of reaction is this continuing European migrant refugee crisis have on social media?
Well, these pictures are continuing to spark outrage. But one element I found this morning, I thought this was very interesting. It's also changing minds, the social media, on this migrant crisis. There's a case in Australia where politicians were posting on Facebook and Twitter about this and saying we need to do something. And it got so many likes and retweets and favorites that they actually said we paid attention to that and we saw that the people were speaking out, and that actually influenced their policy and how they were going to approach it. So I thought that was a great use of social media, people making their voice heard. I know we've talked about the migrants using social media, but these are people outside of that situation using it to support them, which is, I think, a great use. Here in the U.S., we have trending today something that happened last night with Donald Trump, which usually when anything happens with Donald Trump, it becomes a trending topic. But Donald Trump was at a rally, and a man asked him a question and implied that President Obama was Muslim and not American. And a lot of people jumping on Donald Trump because he did not correct the man making this statement. He went right into answering the question. A lot of people noting that John McCain had faced a similar instance when he was running for president back in 2008, and he immediately said, wait a minute now, this man is not a Muslim, he's Christian, he said so, he's an American, he's born in America. So a lot of people jumping on Trump for that. People saying it drives them crazy. One person said, it drives me crazy that Obama is called a Muslim because he really isn't, and they're implying that Muslims aren't capable of running a country. So there's a lot of deep-seated racism in that. And then the other people are saying that it's offensive, not just what Trump implied by not correcting the gentleman, but what he actually said afterwards. He said that we should deport a lot of people to get rid of the country's Muslims. So a lot of people offended by that. We talked about hashtag I stand with Ahmed. This is the boy in Texas who built this clock, and it was supposed to, you know, the teachers thought it was a bomb, and long story short, he's now going to the White House and Facebook and Google and all these places. Well, he's getting flack actually from a strange place in a viral video. A 13-year-old boy from Georgia, Augusta, Georgia, named C.J. Pearson, has gone on to YouTube, made a viral video where he calls out President Obama for inviting Ahmed, saying, what about when police officers get shot, you don't invite their families to the White House? So this young man, 13 years old, already has a big social media following, a staunch conservative supporter of Ted Cruz at the age of 13. He's actually running a young people's group supporting his candidacy for president. So a back and forth between two young minds of tomorrow on social media. And this really speaks to where these conversations happen. They do happen on YouTube and Twitter and Facebook.
Yeah, and a real wide section of opinion there.
Yes. So,
yeah. All right, thanks a lot, Andrew. That's social media editor Andrew Pelshevsky. Well, in other news, Thai authorities have formally blamed last month's deadly Bangkok bombing on a Uyghur human smuggling network that officials say was angry about a police crackdown on its business. The investigation into the bombing has been criticized as disorganized, with at times contradictory statements by top officials. Ron Corbin reports from the Thai capital.
Thailand's worst ever single terrorist attack on August 17 claimed over 20 lives and wounded more than 100, leaving a Thai populace fearful and concerned of more attack. Authorities tried to quickly reassure the public and the country's important tourism industry that the episode was not an act of terrorism, even though they admitted they did not know who carried out the attack. Investigations were initially led by the Metropolitan Police, officers from a local police district, and the Thai Special Branch, a special unit that focuses on high-level cases. Concerns about the police investigation came barely a day after the blast, when the police announced they had already completed their investigation of the downtown bomb site and dispatched cleaning crews to scrub the entire area. Analysts say the image of the Thai police was also tainted when an $85,000 reward offered by the National Police Chief for information leading to the capture of the bombers was instead claimed by the police themselves. Following criticism, National Police Chief Somyot Bumpanmong handed control of the investigation to teams from the special branch. Tony Davis, an analyst with IHS Jains, says the investigation had a breakthrough on August 29 with the arrest of an ethnic Uyghur man in suburban Bangkok found with dozens of forged Turkish passports and explosives.
When they picked up a guy we now know to be a Turkish citizen of Uyghur extraction in the apartment in Nongchok on the edge of Bangkok, once they started to make that progress, and once one arrest led to another arrest, obviously police work has accelerated and has made significant strides in the last 2 weeks.
Since then, police have made at least three arrests, tracking suspects travelling through Vietnam to Laos and Malaysia, as well as Bangladesh. The Anti-Money Laundering Office has also reportedly followed the money trail, linking several co-conspirators to funds used for a Uyghur human smuggling operation. There is still speculation over what the prime motivation was for the attack. Authorities insist it was retaliation for a police crackdown on human smuggling. But analysts point to the government's decision in July to return 109 Uyghurs back to China after allowing more than 170 others to travel on to Turkey. They were among a group of some 400 Uyghurs who had fled to Thailand in March 2014 amid an ongoing crackdown against the ethnic community in China's western Xinjiang province. Rights groups and Western governments had urged Thailand not to return any Uyghurs to China, where they could face retribution. Their forcible return led to harsh international criticism and violent protests in Turkey, where demonstrators attacked the Thai consulate. Titinan Ponsudarak, a political scientist at Chulalongkorn University, says the Thai government has a dilemma after coming under pressure from China to send the Uyghur men back to Xinjiang province against their will.
So the government is in a tough spot because if it admits to the mistake of deporting the Uyghur, it means that it has come too close to China because China has recognized the military coup last year. At the same time, the government does not want to go too far in admitting that the bomb attack was a terrorist operation because Thailand relies on tourism.
In the meantime, some 98 Uyghurs remain in Thai immigration detention, facing an uncertain fate, whether they will be deported to Turkey or sent back to China. Ron Corbin for VOA News, Bangkok, Thailand.
This is VOA.
Here's science in a minute.
Some 3.5 billion light years from Earth, there are two black holes, locked together by their gravity and tightly orbiting each other. As their orbits continue to close in, scientists expect that they will join together in less than a million years. The scientists use data about the black hole duo called PG-1302-102 that had been gathered by NASA's Galaxy Evolution Explorer and the Hubble Space Telescope. When the two black holes, a large one and a smaller companion, finally do crash into each other and become one, it's expected to trigger a colossal cosmological blast that will be equivalent to 100 million supernovae. If any of us are still here in a million years, we'll be in for quite a show. The researchers say they have been studying these close-orbiting black holes to get a better understanding of how galaxies and the giant black holes at their centers merge. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we hear about the Country Music Award nominees. Almost half of jobs here in the United States are likely to be automated within the next two decades. That's according to researchers at England's Oxford University. As more and more robots take over jobs that used to be performed by people, human workers are becoming justifiably anxious. But a Boston-based business expert says there are ways that workers, especially millennials, those who reached adulthood since 2000, can adapt. VOA's Julie Tabo reports.
Robots can flip burgers, build cars, and greet clients at a reception desk. As the workplace becomes increasingly automated, workers are understandably increasingly worried.
What we've seen, at least from the U.S. and maybe the more Western industrialized countries over the last 25 years, is the removal of entry-level job and removal of the simple repetitive manufacturing jobs.
And business expert Nigel Dessau says that trend is here to stay.
You know, there's a funny line from a Sylvester Stallone movie set in the future where a character calls the police station and the person says, if you'd like to speak to a robot, please press 1 now. If you're okay still speaking to a person, stay on the line. And it's sort of the way we're heading.
But Dessau, author of Becoming a 21st Century Executive and founder of the mentoring website, The 3-Minute Mentor, says there are ways workers, especially millennials in their 20s and 30s, can adapt to this new reality, starting by making themselves stand out.
So the jobs that can be easily automated are easily replaced. When looking to build a career in this century, you have to think more about other sets of skills that you need to get. And I typically focus on three.
The first, he says, is content.
So that's, what do do you know? What do you bring that a machine doesn't know?
The next principle is approach.
How do you get to work with other people? How can you lead a team?
And finally, he says, there's your network.
Who knows what you know and what you can do? And so focus less on the processes, because those are what gets automated. Focus more on the content and the ability to work as a team. And that's what will differentiate you and protect you from being replaced by a robot.
The businesses that are most vulnerable to automation, says Dessau, are the fast food industry and other labor-intensive businesses such as manufacturing. But even those industries still need people, he insists. Being able to talk with and lead people from different backgrounds, cultures, and countries is a crucial skill in this global business environment, something a robot cannot accomplish.
You know, those restaurants where they're putting fast food automated systems still need managers, and they still need leaders, and they need people to talk to customers. And those are the skills that people need to acquire.
In addition, Dessau says, millennials tend to have a particular mindset, which also sets them apart.
When you talk to that generation, you say, what do you want for a job? What you see them talking about is they want jobs that they can be passionate about, jobs that fulfill some greater purpose. And hopefully what all this automation will do is give us the ability to do better things with our life, less boring, less redundant things, and work on more meaningful things where we can help each other and help the community.
And that seems to be his best advice for millennials and anyone else entering the 21st century workplace.
At the end of the day, it is your career. It is your life. And you must make the decisions to make your life successful. And you can't blame robots and you can't blame automation. Don't delegate the responsibility for your success to something or somebody else.
Julie Tabo, VOA News, Washington.
This is VOA.
I'm Millar Sega, host of VOA's The Correspondence, a weekly roundup of the top stories with analysis from our dedicated reporters around the globe.
Among the stars expressing support, Frida Pinto.
This is a problem that inflicts almost every country.
Think of it as a conversation on the biggest issues of the day, wherever the news may be. Our correspondents are there. Listen to The Correspondence, Saturdays and Sundays on VOA.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's weekly newsmaker interview program. Listeners around the globe get insights from authors, analysts, and policymakers on a wide range of topics, from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA, every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
This is International Edition. Well, the nominees for the CMA Awards have been announced, and VOA's Country Hits USA host Nikki Strong joins me in the studio to talk with me all about them. Well, last week, the Country Music Association has announced their annual awards, and I know, Nikki, you are the country music authority here, particularly compared to me. Let's go over some of these categories and get some of your predictions. Okay, first up, Entertainer of the Year.
Okay, so Entertainer of the Year, you have Garth Brooks, Luke Bryan, Kenny Chesney, Eric Church, Miranda Lambert. Now, these are all great artists, but I think Garth Brooks is going to win. Now, he took 10 years off. Over 10 years off to take care of his family. And then he returned with a worldwide tour. He's been selling out venues. He's been adding new dates. And he wound up being the highest paid country artist on the Forbes list of top paying celebrities. So I think that speaks to his staying power. So I think he may actually walk away with that award.
Wow. We'll have to see. Okay. And now what about Album of the Year?
Okay, so Album of the Year, you have Jason Aldean, Old Boots, New Dirt, Pageant Material, Kacey Musgraves, Painkiller by Little Big Town, The Big Revival by Kenny Chesney, and Traveler by Chris Stapleton. Now, a lot of people, Chris Stapleton has really gotten a lot of respect. He doesn't have the commercial weight as some of these others, but many people believe that his album is truly the best album of the year. However, Little Big Town had a humongous crossover hit with Girl Crush, and so
if the commercial factor really winds up tipping it, it'll go to Little Big Town.
Okay. Female vocalist of the year.
Okay, this is hard. Now, first of all, Reba McEntire should have been nominated in this category. She was snubbed out of all the awards, which concerns me. But she was snubbed. Now, this is a hard one for me. The other ladies in the category are Miranda Lambert, Kacey Musgraves, Carrie Underwood, Leanne Womack, and Kelsey Ballerini. I think it's going to be between Miranda Lambert and Carrie Underwood. Carrie Underwood is like the it girl right now. And so I think she may actually have it, even though I would love it if Leanne Womack got it. But that's just me. We'll see.
Okay. And what about the male vocalist?
Male vocalist. I think this is even harder. You have Dierks Bentley, Luke Bryan, Eric Church, Blake Shelton, Chris Stapleton. These are all great guys. But I think Luke Bryan has been on fire this year. He's had multiple songs on the charts at once. He had an exhibit at the Country Music Hall of Fame and Museum, which I think is pretty hot and speaks to his popularity and his legacy. And I think that commercial success will translate into Male Vocalist of the Year.
Okay, and last but not least, New Artist of the Year.
Okay, now Chris Stapleton has potential here because his talent really warrants recognition beyond just a nomination. But I think Sam Hunt has taken the country by storm. His songs have hit number one. They have stayed there on the charts. I remember Take Your Time and his current number one hit, House Party. They were in the top five for a while on the Hot Country Singles chart. So I think his sound is very indicative of contemporary country music and the direction that it's going.
That's Nikki Strong. She's the host of Country Hits USA. You can tweet Nikki at @VOA_music and also look her up on Facebook at VOA Music. We'll have a house party. We don't need nobody. Turn your TV off. Break that boombox out. We'll wake up all the neighbors till the whole block hates us and the cops show up. And that is our show. Please visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us and have a great weekend.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States and South Korea continue to share an increasingly dynamic partnership that includes military, economic, and development issues. The close ties, said Assistant Secretary of State for East Asian and Pacific Affairs Daniel Russell, are important because of the challenges and opportunities in front of us. The U.S.-South Korea alliance, forged in war, built on trust, and tested repeatedly, is stronger than ever, said Assistant Secretary Russell. This military alliance will only grow stronger as each country invests in its armed forces and joint capabilities on the Korean Peninsula. The U.S., South Korea, and its allies have shown North Korea that a brighter future is possible if it chooses a different path, one without nuclear weapons and destabilizing provocations. Due to its self-imposed isolation, North Korea has cut itself off from prosperity, and the dynamism of Northeast Asia has passed it by. South Korea, on the other hand, is leading the way economically in the region. South Korea has become the United States' sixth largest trading partner. By 2017, nearly 95% of consumer and industrial products will be duty-free under the United States Free Trade Agreement with South Korea. Bilateral investment has also grown steadily. In 1996, Samsung opened what is now one of the most advanced semiconductor fabrication plants in the world in Austin, Texas. All told, Samsung supports over 4,000 jobs in Austin, and they're still expanding. Meanwhile, General Motors is the largest U.S. investor in Korea, making a fifth of its global production there. Both countries must remain resolute in the fight against terrorism, said Assistant Secretary Russell. South Korea is a member of the Counter-ISIL Coalition and its Foreign Terrorist Fighters Working Group. It was among the first to commit $1 million to a UN development program stabilization project in areas liberated from ISIL in Iraq. On the issues of global development and fighting epidemic diseases, South Korea has just agreed to spend $100 million over the next 5 years to help 13 countries fight against infectious diseases. The U.S. looks forward to working with South Korea as it continues to develop its role as a regional military and economic leader.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.